Hello and welcome to The Two Dyspraxics. I'm Barbara Neal.
And I'm Matthew Munson.
Today we've been asked by Amy in our dyspraxia group if we can discuss a particular topic. And what Amy has said is another interesting topic would be communication problems with dyspraxia and how different people manage them. What are their strategies? Things like being too slow to process what someone is saying in real time or forgetting a word you were planning to use at the last second. So, Matthew, have you got anything to say about that?
Well, do you know what? It's like she's talking about me. Because absolutely, I mean, that's got to be a dyspraxic issue. I'm sure some non-dyspraxics have it as well. But yeah, oh yeah, that absolutely sounds like me. I'm nearly 40, and you know, I have to sometimes stop and go, right, what am I going to say here? And I sometimes need to think for a couple of minutes before I can actually make a contribution to something. You know. Yeah. And funny enough, the source of the problem in the head, when I used to work in local government, we used to have a lot of meetings, sometimes meetings for meetings' sake. And, I used to hate chairing them because I used to just sometimes like to sit back, think about things, listen to what people were saying, and then try and come up with something. But it was just difficult because sometimes the moment had passed.
Oh, I really completely understand that. And I have to say I responded the same way as you when I read Amy's comment in our group. And I thought, well, that is me to a T. You know, that really is. So it's such a very, very good topic. So thank you, Amy, for that. But I think particularly in a group discussion situation, I really struggle because I find it difficult. The mechanics of holding a group discussion for me is, well, it can be quite stressful, definitely tiring, if there's more than about three of us, because I'm thinking all the way through it now, is it my turn to speak? Would I be interrupting if I speak now? And all of that kind of inner dialogue is going on.
Yeah.
So, and it's, is this appropriate? Have I missed the moment? You know, so I'm sort of constantly working out how I should join in with the discussion, basically, and that I find extremely tiring.
Yes, yeah, I agree. And yes, absolutely. I sometimes find that I try and avoid situations where I know there's going to be a large group of people, and I know I do it as well because I'm anxious, maybe a bit stressed about trying to maintain a dialogue that is exactly as you say, appropriate, measured. Kind of, that I'm not talking too much, I'm not talking too little, that I'm finding that balance. I think probably like you, I mean, I'm far more comfortable talking one-on-one or your group of three.
Yes.
Or four, something like that. And if I know the people well and we've kind of got a long relationship and we kind of, we've worked each other out, well, a slightly larger group is fine because I kind of know what's expected of me. But if it's a group of people that I don't really know that well, I'm like, I almost don't want to do it or go to the meeting, or I don't want to have to chair something, or I don't have to attend because I just don't know what I'm meant to be doing.
Yeah, I think so. And even with the group of people I know, because as you know, I belong to a writers group.
Mm.
Great people. We're basically a group of friends who all happen to write and talk about writing. So it's that. But even with that group, when there are eight of us or seven of us, I really struggle. So I come away from it feeling worn out, frankly. Yeah. But not because of, I mean, the content, the things that we talk about are always very interesting and, quite good fun and so on and so forth. But it's the mechanics of being involved in that group discussion that I find incredibly tiring.
Yeah.
Even with people I know, that's an issue.
And I think you've hit on it there. Actually, it's not the content of the discussion. It's exactly that. It's the process of getting it right.
Yeah.
And sometimes I know I do it sometimes even if I'm in a small group where I'm comfortable or one on one. If I'm passionate about a subject, I sometimes forget to kind of okay, well. When is it appropriate to kind of leave a pause to hear what, to actually not just to give the other person a chance to speak, but listen to the other person, make sure I'm not just rehearsing what I want to say next because I need to make sure I feel confident in how I'm going to phrase it. I need to make sure I'm listening to the other person because I want to hear what they've got to say. And but also be ready when they finish their point to say something back. So I'm trying to sort of parallel process that in my brain. And it doesn't always work.
No, it's all order, really. Mm. And actually, something else that... Amy said, things like being too slow to process what someone is saying in real time. Now, something that really irritates me, and I had an experience of this recently where I had my phone, and it's something I was performing a task on my phone, which I usually do, I'm used to doing it, that it was in front of someone else who was chipping in saying, you press that, no, you press that. I know what to press, I know how to use it, but it takes me a little bit longer to process that.
Yeah.
Because of my dyspraxia. So I find that is really hard. Yeah, you know, when someone who isn't dyspraxic, somebody who's neurotypical, in other words, I guess, they can see, you know, they're assuming that I don't know how to do it. I don't know what I'm meant to be doing. And I that really does get up my nose, I've got to be honest.
Yes, I know exactly what you mean, where they think you don't, they think you don't understand it. Well, actually, you do. You're just having to think about.
Yeah.
And actually, you saying that, talking about phones, you just made me think, actually, do you find any particular method of communication particularly more stressful, like, you know, if you're on the phone or if you're talking to a person or talking on the move or talking statically, do you find anything, any particular way of communicating more stressful than any other?
Well, you say on the move, and I thought you were going to say on the moon, actually.
Yeah, that's a two dyspraxic secret base that we've got on the moon.
Yeah, that's how my brain works. But, on the move, certainly when I'm walking along with someone, and I know that you and I have experienced this, where we sort of jostle each other, you know, and jostle other people. If you're walking and talking, it's like that old thing about walking and chewing gum at the same time, you know. I can't multitask very easily.
No, really. So
that's difficult. But no, I'm fine with phones. I'm fine with FaceTime. I'm fine with all of that, all of that sort of thing. So I don't really find any one particular method stressful. It's just in a group, I think. When I was a lot younger and a lot less confident than I am now, I used to struggle even with a one-to-one situation. I didn't like, you know, I didn't feel comfortable talking to other people, you know, holding a conversation, because I was just my self-esteem was incredibly low, and I'm absolutely certain that's down to dyspraxia, because it wasn't picked up, obviously. You know, I don't think many people knew about dyspraxia in those days, so I blame it totally. Even a one-to-one situation, I would feel shy, I'd feel uncomfortable, which I certainly don't now. And in fact, public speaking is not a problem for me, provided I know what I'm talking about, I know my subject.
Yeah.
I'm absolutely fine with that, because I'm in control of the situation. I don't have to work out, now, should I be saying something now? Should I be waiting? Is it someone else's turn? Am I talking too much? You know, I don't have all of that stuff going on like I do in a group situation.
That's an interesting point, actually. Yeah, because I think you're in control of it then, aren't you? You kind of know, because you got it in your head and you can structure it, I guess. And because actually, you asked a really good point. Because, like, again, I mean, I worked for the local council. I think I was actually working for the local council when you and I first met, I think, if I remember. And one of the jobs I ended up doing was kind of, you know, going out to community groups to kind of, you know, first of all, promote what we were doing in our kind of area, and also listen and hear from other people to say, well, actually, do you know what, you know, we could work together on this, or how to collaborate. And if I had to go out and kind of do that kind of stuff, the first few times I did it, so I'd have been, I don't know, my very late 20s, no, even maybe before that, mid-20s, something like that, it was a bit nerve-wracking at first, because, you know, you're going into a room full of 20, 30, 40, 50 people, and you're thinking, oh, my God, you know, how am I what's going to happen? But actually, I soon found a confidence I didn't know I had doing that. And, you know, I got a sort of a standard speech that I used to give, and I could tailor it to fit a different group's requirement, you know, if it was a different type of community group. And then you'd invite some questions at the end. You'd have a dialogue, a proper conversation with people. And whether it was because I was in what I felt was control of a situation, or for a different reason, it felt comfortable doing that. And you know, over the intervening 10, 15 years, I've given lots of different talks, lots of different things, and it feels comfortable, you know, speaking in public now. It's funny because I remember doing a talk at a school once, and because I've got a very slight lisp, I had speech therapy when I was a kid because I couldn't say my THs properly on my S's, and I'm pretty okay now, but I've still got, you can probably hear it, a very slight lisp now when I say the word, sort of the S's, and it doesn't bother me, I don't care. And it was interesting, a kid in a school a few years ago, I was doing a book talk, and at the end he put his hand up and he had a question. He said, "Excuse me, sir," he says, "did you know you've got a lisp?" Bless his heart. And he wasn't doing it because he got a lisp himself, and he wanted to talk to somebody who was in a similar situation to him. I said, "Oh yeah, absolutely." I said, and I talked a bit about my speech therapy and kind of what we're discussing now a little bit. And it was lovely because and the teacher kind of looked terrified because she thought I was going to be deeply offended by. I was like, no, it's fine, because I've got a lisp. It's true. So I'm not going to, I can't lie about something, not that I want to, but I'm not going to lie about something that is evident. Actually, it was a nice dialogue because that innocence of youth, the confidence this lad had got to kind of go, you're like me. It was lovely.
And I think also the confidence that you had to treat it respectfully and, you know, in the manner in which it was portrayed, you know, I think that's really nice.
Yeah.
This is a slight aside, I suppose, but I've given a few talks and run workshops on dyspraxia awareness.
Mm.
And there was one that I was actually, I was there as a dyspraxic person for somebody else's talk, but doing my part of that talk, if you like. And I said, when I was a youngster, I used to, I was struggling with my walking, particularly when I was sort of a teenager and very self-aware then.
Yeah.
And so I said that I used to feel as though, and still do to some extent, but feel as though I'm walking along and the pavement is coming up and hitting the soles of my feet. And there was one lad who was there, and he stood up because he said, "Yes, yes." And he obviously got it. So,
wow.
It's really, it's nice when you can sort of help somebody to relate, I think. You know, that's really useful.
Yes. And actually, I think being dyspraxic and having those kind of issues sometimes and thinking, God, am I doing it right? Is this going well? Is it not going well? If you then meet somebody who you get a connection with and think, oh my God, you get me, and you clearly don't, either haven't noticed that I've got some anxiety about this or don't care that I've got some anxiety about this or whatever it might be, you think, yeah, you get me. And it's and those moments are so treasured when they happen. And it's something that maybe dyspraxic people, you see, neurodiverse people probably feel kind of when they make that link with other dyspraxic people.
Yes.
You think you've been there, you know, in that same way as me.
Yeah, I think so, because it can be quite isolating if you don't, you know, if you discover you're dyspraxic, but you don't know anyone else who's dyspraxic. To encounter other people, hence our dyspraxia group, you know, where I think we often see this where somebody says, oh, great, you know, someone else understands, you know, which is always nice to see. I was just having a look at another part of Amy's comment here where she said, forgetting a word you were planning to use at the last second. Oh, boy, do I do that.
All the time, me too. Oh, yes.
So how do we cope with that, would you say, and what are the strategies for coping with it?
Probably the humour in the situation, I guess. Yeah, sometimes I just laugh it off and go, oh, God, I can't remember what I was going to say.
Yeah.
You know, all that word. And, you know, sometimes I just laugh it off because I think, does it actually matter? Can I find... I'm being glib, but I don't want to think I'm being dismissive about that. But sometimes it's okay, I guess. It's just finding the moments when it is.
I think it boils down to confidence, really, doesn't it? Because about confidence already, but I feel that if you really feel confident, then you can get away with that. It's not an issue, you know, because I do that very, very frequently. I think, oh, I've forgotten what I was going to say, or what's that word? Yeah, and I put some of it down to age, frankly. You know, I think my age isn't helping in that respect. But
what, 21, Barbara? 21.
51, did you say?
21.
Oh, 21. I'm sorry. Crikey, I was reminiscing about when I was 51 then. So. but that's neither here nor there. But but I think if you feel confident, then you can laugh it off, you know, and just
sort of absolutely
light-hearted about it. So it's about building confidence, I think, as much as anything.
I agree.
What about coping strategies for all the other issues around communication?
So you see, it's something you just touched right there that's literally given me a thought. It's I want to try and think of why I'm saying it that doesn't sound good because I want it to be, but kind of if you can get to a place where you realise that most people in the world, if they see someone who's struggling with communication, most people don't care in a good way.
Yeah,
you know you're not gonna if you're talking to somebody in a group and they see you're struggling, most people are actually supportive. You know yeah. they're not gonna embarrass you because you're having a communication problem. They're not gonna go, you're a bit quiet, you're a bit awkward, whatever. Most people are actually quite supportive of it. There are some idiots who will mock, unfortunately, and we've probably all experienced that at some point or seen it happen to others. But I think what gave me my confidence, and this is kind of I'm skipping ahead slightly based on what your question was, but it was when people I saw people accept me and just go, okay, he'll come to it in his own time, when he's ready he'll say something.
Yeah,
that was the biggest confidence boost I could get, being surrounded by people who gave me permission to be me and communicate in my own way, or realizing that most people did that automatically. Am I making sense?
Yeah, definitely.
I'm trying to communicate it in a way that makes sense without being stupid.
Yeah, and I think also the point of raising awareness of the fact that we may have difficulties with communication is we need to communicate that to other people. So I would say that's a bit of a double-edged sword, really, wouldn't you?
I absolutely would. Yeah, I really would, actually. Yeah, I'm not laughing at your point. I'm laughing at the fact that you've...
I know what you're laughing at.
It's actually a very serious point you made there, Barbara, and I think that's very serious. But also... can I just explain to the listeners... Well, I know I did, but double-edged sword is a word or a phrase that makes us both freeze and laugh, and then we one of our talking heads videos we're hysterics about 5 minutes. I thought, how many takes did that take us to try and get over this?
I don't know, but I think
it was
about taking 10 takes, but I think it probably took why I don't know, but it's one of those things when you get the giggles about something.
Oh.
That particular phrase just pops up and you will get the giggles, whether it's actually funny or not.
Oh, absolutely. And right this second, I am trying hard to confess the laughter that is bubbling just under my
voice.
I'm trying so. Anyway.
I apologise profusely for setting you up in such a mischievous way.
And I apologise for setting you up a few episodes ago.
I didn't take the bait.
Actually, no, you didn't. Damn you. You got me.
I
thought you were my friend.
I am. Of course I'm in, though I am. But,
you are. You are.
But we are talking about serious subjects.
We are. Absolutely. You're quite right.
I'm sorry for the interjection of lightheartedness, which I just can't resist.
But isn't it funny? You know, even that, doesn't that show how actually, if you have that confidence to kind of just go, this is who I am, you know, I'm going to laugh now because it's funny. You're not worrying that, oh, God, people are going to be upset by that. Yeah, oh, we've got a great audience. We know that people aren't going to be stressed about it. But I think the me of 10 years ago or 15 years ago probably would have been anxious about that because I thought, oh, God, is my communication there? going to offend people. You know, probably some people are looking to be offended by anything, but the majority of people actually care and actually like to support people.
I agree, and I think going back to something that you said just before we started recording was about how the situation with the pandemic has really brought out the best in most people. You know, are rallying and helping people who are in need, and I think that's human nature. I think that we're when the chips are down or you see someone really struggling, I think that most people will help. So I think worrying about how you come across is, it's sort of redundant, really, you know. I know it's easy for me to say if anyone doesn't feel confident, but I think building your confidence is the best thing. And then certainly as I've got older, I've cared a lot less about what other people think of me. That's liberating. So,
and you know, actually, it's I can remember a few years ago, I was interviewing somebody for a job at where I was working at the time. And bless her heart, she was relatively young. I can't remember how old she was, probably either late teens or very early 20s. And from the moment she came into the room, I could see she was nervous. You know, it was probably one of her first ever interviews, you know. And I really felt for her because her answers kind of betrayed her anxiety. And in the end, we kind of went, okay, let's just stop for a moment and let's acknowledge what's going on here. You know, and I know not every interviewer would want to do that, but actually, and bless her heart, in the end, she didn't get the job because we based it purely on the candidates, and then the better candidate with more experience was there. But actually, you know, we took a breath and we took a step back, and by the end, I hope she can kind of look back on that and go, do you know, by the end, I felt better, and maybe I'll learn from that, and the next time I wait for the interview, I can approach it differently.
Yes.
You know, and you know, I know not every interviewer can or would do that, maybe time factor or not have the confidence to engage, but, you know, communication shouldn't be a conflict. Communication is sharing a part of ourselves with somebody else. And I think, the pandemic's shown that, I think.
Of course, and communication also is a two-way process, you know, or communicating something which you want someone else to receive. So I think, in a situation like that, I mean, there is certainly responsibility isn't quite the right word, but it's up to us to build our confidence so that we feel confident to communicate in the way that is appropriate to us. But I think there's probably also bearing in mind that there is someone else involved in communication, whether it's a single person or a whole group, and there is a certain level of responsibility on them to help with the communication process.
I agree. Yes.
It can be tricky, I think, to get that across to other people. You know, if you're expecting someone to share the burden, if you want that way, but it's a difficult one to get across. But I think if you're just honest upfront from the outset and explain, look, you know, I do have a bit of a problem. I'm dyspraxic, and so I do have a problem with communication, and try to express what that problem is, what would help, then there is certainly an onus on the other person or people to play their part in that communication process.
Agreed. And actually, if they're not willing to participate in that and be supportive, then one thing I've learned as I've got older is, do I actually want their validation? Do I want them to be involved in my life in any form? Actually, no. You know, if you're not going to meet me halfway and connect me on a human level, you know, and appreciate the fact that I might need a bit of extra support, do I actually want to associate with you? Do I want to work with you? Do I want to be your friend? Do I want to engage with you as a client, whatever it might be?
Yeah.
The answer is no. I'm not interested in trying to compete for something that clearly you're not going to give me. You know, let's find somebody who actually does get me. That's a hard thing to kind of, that's a big thing. It took me many years to kind of get that, but.
Yeah, I think experience plays a massive part in it, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
And I think I would go so far as to say that even making mistakes and so-called failures, you know, if you're trying something, it doesn't work out, so what? It doesn't matter. It's all a learning experience, and it's all going to add to it. I mean, it sounds like a bit of a cliche, but it does help you to become the person that you're meant to be. You know,
oh,
so falling down from time to time and getting back up and having learned from that experience is incredibly helpful.
I agree. Yes, I agree. You know, and sometimes you think, oh, I wish I hadn't said that. Or you can sometimes feel embarrassed about something you've said, or you think you said, or you think has understood. And yeah, you know, probably we all feel that from time to time. But in the grand scheme of things, that's one occasion. I mean, I can probably still remember a few occasions where I've gone, what was I talking about? What was going on? But you know what? If I think those memories loom large in my long-term memory, precisely because probably they're so rare that they're still there. But I learned from it, and I thought, well, I'm not going to do that again.
That's another reason why they're still there, so you can learn from them.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's why we remember the negative stuff. That's the whole point of it, so that we can learn from it. So,
there's no shame in that. There's no shame in making a mistake. And I think we've lost that kind of as a culture sometimes. You think we've got to be perfect all the time and we've got to look good. No, who says? Where's the rule that says that? If we're going to make mistakes, we make mistakes. It's okay.
And accountability, I mean, the ultimate person that we're accountable to is ourselves.
Yes.
And so I tend to guide everything I do and say. I try to be guided by everything I do and say by my conscience.
Mm. I agree. Yeah.
I think we're drifting off the subject of communication.
There is that bigger point, though, isn't there? You know, fundamentally, if we're kind to ourselves in terms of how we communicate, and we think, well, you know, in the grand scheme of things, have we hurt anyone by what we said? If we have, we seek forgiveness. If we haven't, well, then nobody's died.
Yeah.
No matter what, nobody's died. So let's be kind.
Yeah.
You know, and most people are, I think. And most people are appreciative and understanding and want to help and understand.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's exactly it. So I hope we've... I was going to say answered Amy's question, but it's not actually a question. She's put it forward as a suggestion, but I hope that's helped.
When we first saw that suggestion, I was like, what can we talk about to kind of fill our podcast? But actually, when you start unpacking it, there is a lot to talk about, isn't there?
There is, yeah, there is. It's quite an eye-opener, I think, in many ways, because, well, I thought, oh, yeah, that's definitely me, you know, but how do I cope with it? And I think by discussing it, I've actually answered that question a little bit. You know, I've got an idea of how I cope with certain situations.
It's an eye-opener, isn't it, I think? I think if we all looked at ourselves more, I think we'd all see that actually we're probably better at it than we appreciate. You know, I'm not just saying me, but, you know, people in general. I think we have more abilities than I think we give ourselves credit for sometimes.
Yeah, most definitely. So on that happy note...
...abilities
that we give ourselves credit for.
Definitely.
A way of ending the podcast, I think. So until next time, it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from her.
Bye.
Bye.